Welcome to CME on ReachMD. This segment, cystic fibrosis, the essential role of pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy in patient care, is provided by Prova Education. Your host is Dr. John Russell, who welcomes Ms. Suzanne Michel, clinical assistant professor of the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina, and registered dietitian with over 40 years of experience caring for persons who have cystic fibrosis. Dr. Russell receives consulting fees from Galderma and speaker bureau fees from Sanofi Pasteur. Professor Michelle receives consulting fees from AbbVie. This CME activity is supported by an independent educational grant from AbbVie.
Approximately 85 to 90% of patients with cystic fibrosis suffer from pancreatic insufficiency since birth. This significantly complicates the disease and adversely affects both quality of life and life expectancy. Today, we're going to discuss supplemental enzymes and their role in the health of persons who have CF, the barriers to adherence with pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy, and how pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy is dosed in patients with CF. This is CME on ReachMD. I'm your host, Dr. John Russell. My guest today is Professor Suzanne Michel from the Medical University of South Carolina. Professor Michel, welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to talking to you about pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy.
Suzanne, to begin our discussion, could you explain why supplemental pancreatic enzymes are so important for our patients who have CF?
Certainly. So exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, which is often referred to as EPI, in CF, it's the result of the thick mucus blocking the pancreatic ducts. So the enzymes that naturally go into the intestine when you and I eat cannot get there for persons who have CF. So they can't digest the food. And since they can't digest the food, they can't absorb the nutrients. So they don't absorb the calories and the nutrients from fat, carbohydrate, and protein. Also, the fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K, and minerals are all lost if they don't take enzymes. If you don't take enzymes and you don't grow and gain weight, then you're going to be in poor health if you have CF. Before we had the current kinds of enzymes we have, it was not unusual for patients to really die of malnutrition. But now with these enteric-coated enzymes, our goal is that they grow optimally as if they didn't have CF. And there have actually been a number of studies that show optimal growth in the first 4 years of life means better health, better height, and fewer infections up to 18 years of age.
Wow.
So it's so important to have optimal growth, and that's where the enzymes come in and play such an important role.
So, Professor, are there weight goals for patients with cystic fibrosis?
Well, actually, there are. A few years ago, the CF Foundation took a look at their registry data. They keep data on every patient who was seen at a CF center in the United States. And they looked to see if there was any correlation between body weight as body mass index, BMI, and pulmonary function. And what they found was, as the BMI percentile for children went up, it seemed that there was a better FEV1%. So they aren't saying a better body weight causes better pulmonary function, but there's some type of correlation. So the recommendation for BMI percentile for children who have CF is to be at the 50th percentile. For adults, it's to be at a BMI of 22 for women as a minimum and 23 for men. So what this shows is if you're at a BMI percentile as a child at the 50th percentile, when you graduate to be an adult, you will be at a BMI of 22 or 23. And so that's what all the CF centers strive for, to meet these BMI goals for patients who have CF.
That's great. So in talking about these supplemental enzymes, what types are currently available, and are there new forms of enzymes being developed right now?
So the types of enzymes that are available now are all enteric-coated. And what that means is the enzymes come in a gelatin capsule, and the enzymes themselves are beads. And the beads are enteric-coated. The coating protects the enzyme as it moves through the acidic environment of the stomach. And so when the beads enter the intestine, the coating dissolves and the enzymes are then able to work on the food. So those are the most common used products. Mm-hmm. There is a product that's available that is not enteric coated. And that is often used by people. They'll crush it and mix it in a tube feeding bag, and it sort of pre-digests the tube feeding formula. Back in the day, we only had the non-enteric coated enzymes, and patients really suffered from malnutrition. And there was a really famous study. It's called the Boston-Toronto study, but it's really Toronto versus the rest of the United States. And that showed that if patients got more calories into them and their weight was better, they had a better median age of survival. And that's when the rest of North America looked to Toronto and said, well, I guess we better start pushing nutrition because it will improve survival.
So how would a clinician calculate the dosage throughout the life cycle for a patient who had CF?
So you can calculate enzyme dosing in a number of ways. The most common way for cystic fibrosis, which is different from EPI for other reasons, is to do weight-based dosing. And that dosing is done based on patient's weight, and the maximum dose per meal is 2,500 lipase units per kilogram of body weight to a max of 10,000 lipase units per kilogram per day. And at the CF centers, there's a dietitian at the CF center who can do these calculations in her sleep, and well, really in his or her sleep. And that's the major way that we dose enzymes. The second way you can dose enzymes is based on gram of fat, and that recommendation is less than 4,000 lipase units per gram of fat. And when would you use that? You'd use that, let's say, if somebody's being tube-fed, and you know exactly how many grams of fat that patient is getting in that tube feeding. Another way you might use gram dosing is if a patient says to me, you know, every afternoon I come home and I drink a can of Ensure. Mm-hmm. Well, I know exactly how many grams of fat are in a can of Ensure. You can do fat-based dosing for that. Also, parents have said to me, you know, after school one day my child drinks a glass of milk one day, and then the next day he might eat three slices of pizza. And I know that that's a huge difference in fat. Mm-hmm. So I might teach them how to do gram-based dosing based on differences in fat content of a snack. There are parents who really like to calculate the grams of fat in every meal. I don't encourage that. I think it's a tremendous amount of work. But there are parents who like to do that. And so we teach them how to do that if they're interested.
So it's like carb counting in folks with diabetes.
Yes.
So to follow up on a couple of the points you talked about, one is how would we give enzymes to a newborn with cystic fibrosis, and how would we give the same enzymes to someone who is being tube-fed, as you mentioned?
That's a great question, because when you get a newborn, especially, let's say, a newborn who's in the neonatal intensive care unit because they have meconium ileus or another problem, we can actually give them enzyme. And what we do is you open the gelatin capsule, and there might be very few beads in the lowest dose. And you put it on the smallest amount of applesauce. And you use a baby spoon, and you put it in the baby's mouth, and you sort of turn the spoon over and wipe it off, and then feed them immediately. That's the way I teach parents how to give a newborn enzymes. You can also, some parents like to wet their finger with the baby formula or breast milk, and then put the beads on their finger and let the baby suck it off. Another way that some parents like to do it, and this is only with babies using a baby bottle and an artificial nipple, would be to put the beads on the outside of the nipple and let the baby suck it off. You don't want to put the enzymes in the bottle for a number of reasons. The baby formula would break down the enteric coating, and also you'd have to make the nipple opening so big that the baby would choke. So that's how you give enzymes to newborns, and it works. I'd like to mention something, though, about dosing enzymes in newborns. It's really a challenge, and that's because newborns up to about 4 months of age are just eating constantly, especially breastfed babies. They could be eating every 2 hours. over a 24-hour period. So how do you keep to that 10,000 lipase units? It's very hard, and there was just a paper that was published about a year ago that addressed it. It was mostly an editorial, what do you do about infants? And those of us with a lot of experience in CF know that that baby's growing very rapidly. So we don't tell parents not to feed the baby. We don't tell parents to limit the enzymes. We might go over that 10,000 lipase units, but we know that baby's going to grow, and we're seeing those babies monthly. And they just grow into the dose within that month, and then you have to raise it again. And then by the time they're 4 or 5 months old, they're eating less frequently, and mm-hmm. it's a non-issue.
So for the tube feeding patients, is that just that total daily dose of fat, or how do you dose in those patients?
Tube feeding has become a big point of discussion among dietitians. What we always used to do was say, when you start the tube feeding, you take enzyme. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you take enzyme. And if you wake up in the morning when the tube feeding is just finishing, you take enzyme. Mm-hmm. And that's what we had been doing for years and years and years. But what's happened recently are two things. People are crushing the enzymes, and you say you don't want to crush them because it breaks the enteric coating. But they're crushing them and essentially pre-digesting the tube feeding by putting it in the tube feeding bag, mm-hmm. shaking it, and letting it sit for 15 minutes. The other development that is new in the past year is an enzyme cartridge. And it's a cartridge that you put in the tube feeding line. Mm-hmm. And when you look into the cartridge, there are beads in the cartridge. But these beads are very different. These beads only have lipase, and the lipase is on the outside of the bead. So as the tube feeding runs through the cartridge, it's essentially being pre-digested.
Hmm.
So that is brand new. People are just using it, and we'll see how people do with that. But you are absolutely right. Tube feeding is a challenge.
So there must be other challenges for adherence for patients who aren't newborns or not on tube feeds. So how do you deal with the various barriers to adherence in our other patients?
Well, I can list barriers to adherence. How to deal with them is the one that is
the million-dollar challenge. Question, yes.
So first of all, cost can be mm-hmm. an issue. But cost shouldn't be an issue anymore because there are programs out there. Some are sponsored by the enzyme companies. Some are mm-hmm. sponsored by private organizations that can pick up the copay.
Mm-hmm.
So cost should not be an issue. Time can be a challenge, especially if you think about, you know, you're out, you're at a friend's house with your toddler, and you have to stop the toddler every time the toddler wants to eat something mm-hmm. to give them enzyme. Time is an issue at school, at the schools that do not allow kids to carry their enzyme. So what do you have for lunch now at public schools or private schools? It really doesn't matter which. You have about 20 minutes for lunch.
Yeah.
So they have to go to the nurse first. They have to get their enzyme, and then they have to go down and eat lunch. So time can be an issue. With that, also embarrassment.
Sure. Kids want to feel like every other kid, right?
They don't want to have to be taking these pills every time they eat. And with the stigma of drugs in school, you know, they can be teased for taking drugs. I mentioned grazing. Grazing is a huge problem. And what I mean by that is the person who just eats all day long.
Mm-hmm.
People forget to bring their enzymes. I'm always amazed when people travel 2-3 hours to the CF center and they don't have their enzymes with them. And we have to get them enzymes, but wait, you're going away for the whole day. Don't you have to take your enzymes with you? And then a big problem is the desire to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take your enzymes, you can lose weight. And that takes the help of the dietitian, the social worker, maybe a psychologist. Because if you don't take your enzymes, not only don't you lose weight, you can end up with all kinds of GI complications and malnutrition.
So speaking of GI complications, say I have an adult patient, their dose is maxed out, but they still have GI symptoms. Are there other things I should be thinking about on my differential? How should we handle that?
There are a lot of things to think about. And I have to say that when you talk about differential, in CF, for us, it's easy. A patient comes in, a newborn is diagnosed through newborn screening. We can do what's called a fecal elastase, and the patient's either pancreatic sufficient or pancreatic insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
But in a typical GI office, a patient comes in and you have a huge differential that you have to work through it.
Sure.
So it's so much harder. But in CF, just because you have cystic fibrosis doesn't mean you can't have other problems. Now, what can contribute to GI problems that are non-medical, and then I'll give you some ideas about the medical ones, could be outdated enzymes. You know, you have a stockpile of enzymes, and they're just outdated. Enzymes are very sensitive to extremes of temperature. You put your bottle of enzymes in the glove compartment, and it was 90 degrees out. That denatures the enzyme, so they aren't any good. Excessive juice intake can cause diarrhea.
Sure.
So that I would look at, especially in children. We say so often, take your enzymes with meals and snacks, and we might forget to say, and beverages. So the patient's not taking enzyme with a milkshake, a glass of whole milk.
Right.
That can cause it. A child chewing the beads and cracking the coating. And as I said, that child grazing. And then that patient who has these huge differences in meals. So breakfast might be a bowl of cereal. And lunch might be, as we say here in Philadelphia, you know, a giant cheesesteak. So there's a huge fat difference. So as a dietitian, we have to try and figure that out. Medical reasons are a challenge also. So the patient could be lactose intolerant. The patient could have celiac disease. A patient could have liver disease, small bowel bacterial overgrowth, Giardia. I mean, these are some of the medical reasons that can cause GI symptoms that are separate from enzymes.
Right.
So there's so many things you have to think of when a CF patient comes in and they're maxed out on their enzymes. You know they're adherent. It could be another issue.
It might not be a short visit.
It might not be a short visit. And some of the longer visits involve some of the social issues, especially, you know, that teen who wants to lose weight or that chaotic household where there's no routine to anything. Or that child who has multiple caretakers in the morning with the parents and then goes to Grammy's house during the day and then goes somewhere else in the evening and no one knows what they're doing in terms of enzymes.
And that's why they're centers of excellence for cystic fibrosis, to kind of pull all this together.
To pull all that together, because there is a complete team. And as a dietitian, there are so many times when I need to get a social worker in there with me to help me out. Or if it's a behavioral issue, you know, maybe the psychologist to help with some behavior modification with a young patient.
So before we close, is there anything you'd like to discuss that we haven't talked about, or is anything you'd like to revisit before we wrap up today?
Well, you had some wonderful questions, and you've really covered so many of the important aspects of enzymes and CF. I just want to say again the importance of enzymes, because without optimal growth, you are not going to get optimal health. And you can't get optimal growth without taking enzymes correctly and eating that high-fat diet that you need to eat to meet your calorie needs. So I think it's so important that those working with people who have CF make sure that they are getting what they need in terms of enzyme dosing.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Professor Michelle, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dr. John Russell for ReachMD. Please visit us at ReachMD.com, where you can be part of the knowledge. Thanks for listening.
This segment of CME on ReachMD was provided by Proba Education. To receive your free CME credit or to download this segment, go to ReachMD.com/Prova.